I'm the Doctor.
It's a clobberator.
Engage.
Shazam!
Chevron 7, lock.
In brightest day, in blackest night, no evil shall escape my sight.
Kawabunga.
Welcome, folks. This is issue 34 of Heroes Asylum.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, we
34.
We're cranking them out. So,
and we made it. We made it past five.
Yes, we did.
That was a long time.
And the dreaded like seven. So yeah, we're doing good on this. So.
That's right. We passed the dreaded seven. So screw you all who said we weren't going to finish. So.
So, folks, welcome, welcome, welcome. This is all kind of borderline. This is kind of our 6 month anniversary, so to speak, for Heroes Asylum. We've now been officially cranking these out for 6 months now.
Has it been 6 months?
Last week, yeah, we started on the February 24th. Last week would have been technically the 6 months. So, and also
happy anniversary.
Something, yeah, it's another anniversary. So you know, sort of, and kind of goes in line with this podcast. Something kind of behind the scenes. I'm sure I know I've mentioned it before, and anybody that's listening, it's a close friend. On the 5th of September last year, I had a heart attack, open heart surgery, like major, you know, major life changing thing. And that anniversary just passed as well. So because of that, it was actually a trigger to start the podcast. So it's kind of a fitting 1 year for me and a 6 month for a Heroes Asylum.
Yeah. That's...
And to go along with that, with almost dying, this week's episode or issue will be based off of comic books we feel you should read before you die.
Yes, before you die. Let's not have that again, by the way.
Yeah, no.
By the way, congratulations on being back, and I speak for all the Heroes Asylum fans. We are glad you're still with us, sir.
Thank you, thank you. I'm sure there's
a
couple out there that might, you know, disagree, but
well, you know, not we can't make everybody happy, but
no,
we
can't. That's fine. But folks, there's Kane. Sorry, I jumped into my beginning monologue before I introduced the guy I couldn't do this with. So how you doing today, sir? I heard you had a bad weekend.
Yeah, well, you know, you got to pay the bills, so but I'm here. It's always a thing that I'm looking forward to toward the end of the week. Kind of re-energize and recharge, so I'm well rested and I'm ready to go enjoying this 6 month anniversary of the asylum being open.
Yes.
And taking it over after that very, you know, long endeavor that we did. So
yes,
it's good to be here.
So I also have some good news coming up this weekend. Another behind the scenes, we do finally have the official approval, and that we are going to be doing we are starting in October our Star Trek. Jesus Christ, Michael.
Hey,
our Star
careful.
Wars. Our
don't
Star
get
Wars.
Those
yeah, you never want to crush your stars.
Don't cross stars.
But we're going to be doing a retrospective of all the shows in the Midnight Movie Review. We're going to be doing a watch along for all of them in honor of the New Hope, because that's where we're at in our behind the scenes thing. We will actually have the one and only Steve-O will be joining us. For
yep.
doing a watch along on New Hope, so it will add a little color to this show. Let's say
it's going to be an interesting show.
It definitely will. Yes, but so we're going to go ahead. We're going to get started. Just kind of not. It's been kind of a little slow week again. I mean, it's things have just kind of just brought you know, come down a little bit in the news. But we're going to talk about everything that kind of jumped out to us. And caught our eye, and do also another kind of a quick rundown of a show. So let's get jumping in.
News from East Mission Ward.
So, sir, what do you have? I know you said you thought you had one there.
I just got one thing, basically, that dropped any kind of newsworthy, worth kind of talking about. It was actually really like it was supposed to be, I guess, a teaser trailer from Russia. It was the first teaser of the Birds of Prey. Really didn't show too much. It showed kind of a weird ambiance music. You see a red balloon, then all of a sudden the red balloon dissipates. You see Harley Quinn saying, "Oh, there's no clowns in this movie." Then it busts through the teaser trailer, going like little flashes. You see a little bit of the Huntress, a little bit of a Forgot the cop's name. I think you see
Montoya.
I think you see Montoya. You see Black Canary. Let me see. And then you see Black Mask. You see Black Mask also with Ewan McGregor. Not with the mask on, but just Ewan without his face. And then the trailer ends. And then you see Birds of Prey, The Emancipation of Harley Quinn, which comes out next February. Like I said, not too much to judge it on. It was so quick, but I thought it was interesting that, you know, that thing got finally leaked, because I know they've been working hard on it, and they're doing reshoots currently right now. Don't think a reshoot is a bad thing.
No, it
movies
happens.
Always, yeah. Movies always plan the budget for reshoots. It just happens
yeah.
for every single movie. So
maybe they probably got it in and probably didn't get the right angle they needed. So guess what? That's called a reshoot. I even hear that they're doing that now for Force Awakens, and Force Awakens. Jesus. Rise of Skywalker, man.
What year are you in? Yeah, wake up, man.
But yeah, they're talking about, you know, doing reshoots, and of course, you know, all the rumor sheets are going, oh my God, is this bad boat? Is this boating bad for the movie? No, every movie does them.
Yeah, sometimes it's just used to plus a certain scene. It's like you just said, you know, whether there's an action scene or an angle that they missed, like, hey, you know what, we can make this better. And it's all written into the actor's contract. Yeah. It's all written in the budget, so it's already pre-approved. It's not something like, oh my God, like you just said. So it's no need to panic. Don't panic unless it's like World War Z a couple of years ago, but which actually they reshot the entire movie, and that actually turned out pretty good. So
yeah, or you know, like, you know, Justice League with the mustache situation. Oh. Yeah, that was a reshoot too, and we could have just gone without that. That's one of those times a reshoot was unnecessary.
Very unnecessary. Maybe one day we'll dive into that. Oh
goodness. Yeah, and I think you also had mentioned our good old partners that we got this covered. They had dropped something about, you know, a rumor of a Phase 6 rumor coming out.
I don't know if it's more of a, I think it's something that we've talked about, like, duh.
Yeah.
We knew this was going to happen. Phase 6 Avengers versus X-Men, I think. That's where they're going to head eventually. Yeah, I mean,
yeah, they just bought. Yeah, they just got it. They just got them. So yeah, they're gonna. That's the plan to eventually go that way.
Yeah, but they're not gonna break up their storylines right now. I mean, they got them. You probably see the X-Men start to be mentioned, like, at the ending of Phase 5. Like, you'll see, like, little nuggets here and there. I think if they do it right, and if they do it the way I think they're going to do it, I think the Scarlet Witch is going to be the key. I think the House of M type of stuff. I think they're going to rework that. So
yeah, I could see the House of M style, or, you know, with I mean, just if you look at Doctor Strange's new movie, the trailer or the title for that hints at multiverses. So
yep.
We're right there. There's your door to open it up. I know we thought that's what was going to happen with Spider-Man when, you know, they were, you know, making comments that. I was going to call him Mystique, but Mysterio was, you know, from an alternate universe. But of course, nobody's seen it yet. But that turned out to be a good ploy from Disney and Marvel.
Yeah, a little big ruse. But it's not to say it's not going to happen. And it looks like we will have confirmation of some multiverses out there. So, you know, Marvel has their stuff together. They know what they're doing.
Oh, yeah.
So I have complete faith in those guys. They're, I mean, what, 23 movies in?
Yeah, yeah. So. They're starting. My faith of them starting to shake a little. So, you know, just some of the announcements that I've seen coming down the pike and things that I'm hearing discussed in the back. So I'm starting to waver on Kevin Feige's direction.
I don't know. He hasn't missed yet.
He hasn't yet, but they're coming around to the MCU soon, and that's where I think it might lose some steam and actually lose some fans watching it.
It depends how they do it. I mean, if they're gonna go totally MCU, I mean, we'll see. But I don't think they'll totally do that. Will they incorporate more female characters? I guess they will. I mean, Marvel has some pretty good female characters anyway.
They do. So they need to use the ones they have.
Yeah, true. I mean, but that's what they're doing. They're introducing She-Hulk. She's coming. So, and they got Scarlet Witch, and, you know, the X-Men. I think, you know, they have some women in there. And I mean, as long as they don't do the Dark Phoenix for, like, you know, 30 years,
yeah,
that'll be fine.
And again, it's one of those ones I just like you and I have always talked, and it's like our you know, one of our battles we always have. But, you know, for me, I can't see the Fantastic Four being a movie. They've tried it so many times. Same thing with Dark Phoenix. Just one of those ones. May not be translatable on, you know,
maybe it isn't.
We expect big and maybe they just can't deliver that size of it. I don't. That's something, you know. There's always going to be that one thing we can't get, you know. And it's just something.
And we're not going to get Dark Phoenix. But yeah, we'll just watch the X-Men animated series from the 90s. They did a great job doing the Dark Phoenix. That's the one you need to watch.
So. Yep. Friday, folks. This past Friday, in fact, we got to see season 2 of Titans on DC Universe. I don't want to say spoilers. I think we can probably talk around this.
We could spoil it.
Okay.
Why not?
Go ahead.
We can spoil it, man. Why not? We can spoil it. This is our channel. We can do what we want.
Exactly.
But by the way, there's spoilers ahead, so watch season 2, episode 1, titled Trigon. Pretty much the episode starts off where season 1 ended. You have Raven in the house, and basically Dick Grayson being influenced by the power of Trigon, going to his dark side. So that episode pretty much picks up right then and there. Dick is still under the influence of Trigon. He's chasing Raven and Beast Boy around the house. Trigon is there in his human form with Raven's mother, birth mother. Then we have the other Titans. We got Hawk. We got Dove. Dove, as you know, wakes up from that coma mysteriously somehow through Raven, I think through some kind of mind control, mind manipulation. And they're told to go see Jason Todd. I don't know why, but, you know, they got to go to good old boy Jason Todd. Jason Todd hanging out in Wayne Manor all by himself racing a motorcycle, which I thought was kind of cool.
Yeah.
I'm not going to lie. I mean, if you think about it and you're Robin and you're his age, and there's no Bruce, no Alfred in the house, what are you going to do? Take a cool motorcycle and ride around that big old house. So that's one of the things I do like about Titans. One of the many things is the portrayal of Jason Todd. So
he is, yeah, he's become. I mean, it's so funny to watch it now. I actually enjoyed Jason Todd, but when you look at the, you know, and counteract it with how he was in the comic books, he was hated. But when you watch him here, he's not. They have to turn him. They have to bring out that dickheaded side of Jason, but you know, somehow to maybe make it link up to when that thing happens. That eventually, I would wonder if it will happen in this, or if they're just going to kind of avoid it down the road.
I think they're laying the seeds. I think I know what they're going to do, though.
Yeah,
I can see it coming. But as I finish the review of this episode, we'll tag team it and let me know. Pretty much, so they're in Wayne Manor. Jason Todd is recruited, so they head back to that house back in the middle of nowhere. It looks like the Psycho House. I don't know what it is. They meet up. They see Wonder Girl and Starfire outside of the house trying to zap in. They can't get in. There was actually a cool little moment between Wonder Girl and Starfire. And it kind of gets me thinking that, you know what? These guys do read the comics. When she's introing Starfire to the rest of the Titans, she's like, yeah, this is Starfire. She's an alien from outer space. And Starfire just turns back and looks at Wonder Girl. It's like, damn, couldn't you be a little bit more subtle? Like, I'm like, ah, okay, that's Titans, man. That's from the comics, man, because they always rip on each other. So,
well,
like, okay.
You would hope something made by DC Universe would be done by people that read comic books. So
I know, but you know, sometimes when they do pull stuff like that, you got to be a little bit amazed, because like some people won't do that. They won't go to the source material when you see that.
But it's being generated by the company that owns the source material. Now, if Netflix didn't do it, completely get it, because Netflix is just a production company, but you know, DC, these are DC's properties. They're gonna nail everything on it that we expect.
Well, I'm glad. Well, this DC fan is very happy that they did. So anyway, after that, the Titans start talking. They make fun of Jason Todd being the new Robin and his costume and all that. After that, they try to blast through the barrier. They can't get through. Trigon sees him outside. He's like, you know what? What the hell? Just let him in. He lets him in. And then one by one, they proceeded to get influenced by their own dark sides. Starfire is the first one. She gets in, thinks she sees Raven and Beast Boy, sees them. She's like, how you doing? Blah, 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 et cetera, et cetera. After that, Raven says, oh, Starfire, why don't you just do what you have to do and just kill me? Do your mission. So she does. In this dream sequence, she kills Raven, turns her to dust, and her eyes blacken up, and she's in the dark side. Wonder Girl goes through her own little dream about saving her father from an arsonist. Basically, she catches the arsonist in the act, throws him off a window. She's in her dark side. I think the coolest of the dark moments, I'll call those dark dreams from Trigon, was Jason Todd again when he's fighting Dick Grayson in the Batcave on the body of Batman, which I thought, and the whole fight, I thought it was dope, because these are both Robins, they're both skilled, and Dick Grayson proceeds just to kick his ass throughout that cave. Basically, the dream ends with Jason picking up the gun that was used to kill, you know, Bruce's parents, shooting Dick in the head. He's in his dark side. And then we go on from there. Everybody's pretty much in the loop. Trigon is in his demon form now.
Don't
did I miss something?
Yeah, you brushed over probably one of the darker ones. You brushed over Hawk and Dove.
Oh.
In their dream sequence, that was when I saw that, I was like, are they going that? They you see them, you know, dealing with the pain of everything that's happened to them, you know, in their life, and then and them turning into, you know, turning to basically watching people. You were watching them getting like fucking heroin, ready to go. It was like,
that's right.
The spoon. I was like, man, this is dark.
They went full Speedy on us.
Yeah, that's exactly what I thought. I was like, man, are they pulling Speedy here or what? But yeah, that one was like, that one kind of like dropped my jaw there for a second. I was like, I like the darker side of it. You know, like Deadpool says, you know, you're too dark or you're part of the DC universe, and they're sticking to that.
Yeah, they went dark big time. And okay, so I guess after that, those dream sequences were done. The last thing, Trigon tries to break Raven's heart by killing Beast Boy, or so we think he does. And then Raven basically gets her heart broken, smashes it. Trigon turns it into the crystal that will be in the middle of her head, which will trap her father, if you ever read comic books. So that's in her head, so that we got a little nod there. And Raven has basically gone full dark side. Trigon turns into his demon form, which I thought, for the budget they have, he didn't look that bad.
He looked pretty good.
He wasn't like, you know, 100 feet tall, but, you know, the way he was made, I don't know, like, I guess it was all CGI.
Yeah.
You know, he had like the six eyes or four eyes. He did not look that bad. So I was like, okay, this is pretty decent. Walks out and looks like he's about to take over the world. Guess what? Beast Boy's not there. Turned to a snake. Runs into Raven, touches her. Raven's awoken up, and then she starts waking up Dick Grayson from his little dark dream. Trying to influence him, hey, you're a good dude, you know, you don't want to do this. One of the scenes that I kind of dug during that dream sequence, which is really cool, was towards the end when they're on the trapeze again. And the Flying Grayson's thing is in the circus. I was like, oh, this is a nice little nod. We're going back. And, you know, you go to the past to bring about the future. And she says, hey, look, I'm going to jump off. I want you to catch me. She jumps off. Dick looks at her, going down, down. And, of course, in typical movie fashion, Dick reaches out and gets her, breaks out of the spell, and the rest of them break out. Well, actually, the rest of them don't break out of the spell, just Dick. And then Raven says she's going to have a talk with her dad, which I thought, you know, it could have been cheesy, but I thought it was, you know, because Raven is supposed to be more powerful than Trigon. So I know some people had a problem, like there wasn't a big old fight, but then again, it's an hour-long show, and I took some liberties as well by watching this scene. And I kind of dug it. Like, she basically, you know, you don't see it, but I guess the innuendo is that she trapped her father inside the diamond that's in her head.
So that's the one thing I wasn't sure, because it looked like he vanished into a like some rift in the sky.
Yeah,
that's what that I was like. Okay, I thought it was supposed to go the other direction. So
I just don't think they showed it. So I'm just gonna take like, you know. You know, because you didn't see a moment she just comes out of the smoke, and she looked older when she got out of the smoke, which is
yeah,
scary.
Yeah. Like, well, yeah, I think you and I were talking about that. I wonder if the first half of that show was recorded at the end of season one. They took their break, and when they came back, you know, she's only 15, I think, so she's in that age where, you know, they change overnight.
She changed fast.
If anybody had a kid, you know, within like 2 weeks, you know, or two months, they can go up a shoe size. So she may have just naturally aged from their time off, and so I think that second part of it was filmed when they returned.
Yeah, she looks like she did a lot of growing during that period. That's all I'm gonna say.
Yeah, she looks definitely a little bit taller. I noticed that when she went to go hug.
Yeah, like before she was a small girl, now she's like almost his height. I'm like, whoa, dude, okay, yeah. Little growth spurt.
So. Better get Nightwing some lifts there. Get him back in the
put
him back in the 70s go go boots.
She got those Doc Martens on. So basically that ends. Trigon is gone. I guess we're going to assume that he's gone to this mist or in the jewel, I guess. Maybe he'll come back. Maybe he won't. Who knows? And then after that, we get the Titans all together talking about what they're going to do. Typical comic book, I think, you know, hey, you know, good luck. You did this job here. It looks like Starfire's leaving with Hawk and Dove to do their thing. And Dick is taking the kids. They ask him where they're going. He's cryptic. He's like, we don't know. I don't know. And Then that scene ends. Then we flash forward to a forest and a cabin. And you know what's coming. We see him in there, some guy with a patch over his eye, gray beard, washing it off. And yes, it's our first introduction to the Titans version of Slade, a.k.a. Deathstroke. What'd you think, Mike, about that?
I thought it was pretty good. At first, I wasn't expecting Slade. I'm trying to remember who I was expecting. I think in the back of my head, I was expecting somebody else. And I'm just trying to go back to when I like watched it and that first gut reaction. Because to me, I didn't think it was Slade in the cabin. I thought he would have been somewhere else. But this part of it makes me understand that we're seeing... I thought this was the beginning, the birthing or the origin story of the Titans, but it's actually...
That's what I thought, too.
But they're hinting, and this, I think with Slade, it was when it finally dawned on me, is this is like another version of the Titans. There's an earlier version that we haven't really talked about or seen yet, which that'd be kind of cool to... I know episode 3 in this season is called Ghost, so I wonder if maybe we'll see maybe a flashback of some sort to earlier Titans.
At the end of the episode, they kind of hinted at past Titans, but you had already met them already. You know, when they're in the that tower. But we'll get there. Anyway, Deathstroke is being played, I believe, by Asa Gonzalez. And if you don't know who that is, I don't think that's his name. I think I just made that name up.
Morales, actually. You're
is it Morales? Asa Morales? Okay, Asa Morales. And if you don't know who that is, he was Richie Valens' brother in La Bamba. That's right. He was the older brother, so he's older now, and he's playing Slade Wilson. Good for him. At least he's still getting work. So that scene ends, and then Dick's driving off in the Jeep with the kids, and where does he go to? Yep. The moment we've been waiting for, kids, he goes to Wayne Manor. Drives up. You can see the goosebumps in his head. He's stopping, and who comes out to greet him? Not Alfred, but Bruce Wayne himself. Now, since Mike and I are big fans of both of these characters, Bruce and Dick Grayson, respectively. I'm going to comment on the perspective of Bruce, and he's going to comment on the perspective of Dick Grayson, and then we're going to tag team together and what we thought of this scene. I thought the Bruce Wayne that we got here was... The actor is fine. I think Ian Glenn's a good actor. He's 58 years old. I don't mind the old Bruce Wayne, as some people do. I just had a problem with the writing in this, because... Bruce said some things here that was kind of caught me off kilter. Like one of the first things he says, "Oh, you surprised me." Bruce Wayne would never be surprised. He's always on alert. He always knows what's going on. He should have been like, "Hey, Dick, okay, I knew you'd come by eventually." You know, he has to have that humbleness but arrogance at the same time. He leads him inside to get some tea, and they talk to each other. He's like, "Hey, you know, I regret what things happened, but you know, I'm here to lay the shelf." And he just his dialogue and the whole scene was kind of like just not Bruce Wayne to me. The only time he was Bruce Wayne to me was like toward the end when he said, "You're going to do this. Well, guess what? But to do that, you need to do me a favor." And I hope it gets better, but I just think the writing for Bruce was very badly done in this scene.
Yeah, I agree. I think I got a chance to watch it first, and I kind of threw you a text. I'm like, dude, I think Clooney and Kilmer were actually better Bruce Waynes, and it hurt me to type that.
And that's sad to say
it really did. It was very, very, and I'm the same way. I love the actor. I loved him in Game of Thrones. He was in like Tomb Raider and the original one, you know, the original Lara Croft ones with Angelina Jolie. But it seemed too cardboard for Bruce. And like you said, Bruce, there's a certain swagger Bruce has. And every person has ever played Bruce Wayne or Batman has this swagger about him that he knows. He always knows. He's the greatest detective. And he just didn't come across that way. It was very odd. I would almost equate it as if this was written more as an Alfred role, and they decided to change him over because the way he talked was more of Alfred than Bruce.
Yeah, he was not really. Yeah, that's not the Bruce Wayne, and even the older Bruce Wayne that I know, it just didn't fit. Didn't fit at all. I mean, like I said, I think it's the writing. I don't think it's him. So hopefully, I think they have an episode. I think episode 3 is not Ghost. I think it's called Bruce Wayne. So I think we're going to
dive in. No, I got the list here.
Because I thought episode 10 was Ghost.
I thought they said 3. Strange Ghost on the list. I was just looking it up before we started talking about it.
I don't know. I looked it up too. I mean, they could have changed it as well, maybe. So I don't know. But anyway.
But, yeah. But you know, there was also a lot of things in the writing too. There's something you and I joked about was they're referring to Jason as Jason Todd. They're using his full name. You're talking about Jason. Just say Jason. You don't just have to say Jason Todd. It was the weirdest conversation. Like I said, like it was just very poor writing, I think, and it just very bland and cookie cutterish.
Yeah, I just think they got the writers got excited, like, oh, I'm working with Bruce Wayne, and I got to write dialogue for Dick Grayson, and they just like they totally dropped the ball. You know, you didn't have to overdo it. You didn't have to say Jason Todd. You just like go subtle. It's, yeah. Hey, he knows who Jason is already. Like, yeah, I think and you just go from there.
I don't think there's another Jason that they both would be talking to about at that moment.
Yeah, there's not no Jason Siegel who I went to high school with him. That's just not that guy. It's they know the Jason, so it's just it was kind of odd. I mean, I have hope. Like I said, he's a good actor. I think the scene.
That's why I was so I was so disappointed with it. I was like, man, because I was so looking forward to him playing that character, and I know he can play gritty and, you know, and I know it's a father and son can talk, so you know he doesn't have to drop into the Batman voice when he's doing it, but still, just something was missing.
Yeah, I mean, hopefully it'll get better.
Well, let's hope. You know. We'll cross our fingers. And like I said, it's something I'd said, you know, when we first started talking about Titans before they even rolled out was, I think this is all about the kids. It's not about Bruce. It's not about Clark or, you know, Diana. It's all about the kids. That's why I think we're mostly going to see them. I think we talked about this last episode that we're really, if we see them, we're going to see them in this way. We're going to see them in their alternate, you know, personalities, not. We're not going to see them. We're not going to see the capes. We're going to see the
No. Yeah. I don't think. Well, yeah, you're right. We're not going to see Supes or we're not going to see the big three anywhere.
Yeah, I mean, not in costume. We'll see them, you know, in their civvies.
Which is fine. It's like you said. This is Titans.
Yeah.
Not Justice League. Yeah. So I can dig that. So. And the end of the episode ends, I guess, saying, "Hey, we're going to San Francisco." And if you have read anything about the Titans, they are based out of San Francisco. And they go up to this tower, which is, I guess, is the pseudo T tower. People had issues with it. And then I tell them, I go, look, they're not going to design a damn tower that looks like a T.
Yes.
All right? You got a little nod with it being a tower. They're not going to make a giant T.
I almost thought I saw the lights on the building go into a T shape, but I thought I did too.
And I was like, okay, this makes sense. I mean, because first of all, that's architecturally impossible to make a tower like that. So for them to think that they're actually going to do the giant T, I think was kind of a little silly. I think if the tower blows up, maybe it'll be in the shape of a T or something.
Getting blown up, you'll see a T.
Yeah, you'll see a T. But, you know, that's about it. So that's pretty much Titans episode 2 or season 2, episode 1. A lot of promise. I like where it's going. Just work on the writing a little bit and, you know, tighten that up and we'll be okay.
Yep. Yeah, that's all I say. Yeah, that's the same thing I say. It's just tighten up the writing, make it a little bit cleaner, not so forced and, you know, cardboardish. I think they'll do good. I think it was what I expected from a good middle part, because I really think this was the ending to season 1 and beginning of season 2. So I really think, you know, season 2's first true episode will be this Friday. Rose, I think, is the episode.
Yeah,
title.
Rose.
So I think that'll be. This will be the new direction, huh? So I can't wait to see how that goes.
Which is kind of an interesting way they're doing it now. I at first I was like, huh, you know, when you do your season finale, you want to end it, but instead they're picking up with the next season with the season finale of season 1 as episode 1, season 2. I was like, that's interesting.
Well, that's how it used to be. I mean, when you really, I mean, you think back when we were growing up, that's how it was. There was a season cliffhanger, and part 2 was season 1 or episode 1 of the next season. You know, that's how they used to run TV shows. Is that they have that?
Maybe that's why I'm just not used to it.
We're not. No, we get it. Nowadays, we're so used to here's a season, 13 episodes, run one and done. We're you know, the story's over. Next season, we'll start something new, a new arc. But actually, to have that hangover and, you know, it just holding out there.
It's different. So I mean, I'll give it a shot, see what happens. So season 2. Episode 1, Go Titans. Yeah. I thought I was going to hear Booyah for some reason on that show. But
Well, no, you got to wait till Cyborg comes back.
I think he should. Well, he's on Doom Patrol. He's not too far away.
Yeah, I hope they'll do another crossover. I think I would love to see that, and also something you and I are close, as close to our heart as seeing maybe a crossover with Swamp Thing.
Oh, please. Please.
I think they were doing so well with that, and there was so much to do. I mean, it would be perfect to have them, maybe even have the Titans go and try to take on, Florida Man?
The Floronic Man.
Yeah, have him, go in there and maybe have them, run into, now that Blue Devil's out, he's out of the town, maybe them run into him. I'd love to see Ian come back again.
God, I hope, man, I can't see him back as Blue Devil.
Hey, I love that. I thought that was great to have him in there.
Yeah, that'd be good. So well, that's Titans season 2, episode 1. So we look forward to seeing some more.
Yes, I can't wait. Cannot wait. Keep pushing people to try to get signed on to that, because there's so many little goodies out there for it.
Yeah, just got to open your eyes, man. Just got to open your eyes.
So, like I said, we were going to talk about the comics to read before you die. We both have a bit of a list, not a bit of a list, a kind of standard list for each of us of books we think you should read, check out, whether they're great graphic novels, a good just one series, one issue, story arcs that go over for quite a bit. Probably that would be fall more under the graphic novel range. So, so we're going to go over our list here. Also, I'm going to kind of go over I've compiled a listing of what is out there on the internet as the most common ones that show up. And I have a feeling that some might be on Kane's and some might be on mine. So, but we will delve into that. What do you have? I mean, it's your very first one that you would, if somebody says, hey, I want to get into comics, and it's something I wanted, get into a really good story. What would be your first?
Well, I guess the first one, and probably my favorite one, is The Dark Knight Returns. Is the Frank Miller one, 1986 4-issue comic run, which is basically one of the comics that transcended comics into this different type of world. I mean, before that, comics were just basically the bland hero and, you knew who he was, and this take of Batman, he's basically older, he's bitter, he's angry. There's a lot of social commentary in there with Ronald Reagan, the times, the period, and this is basically a Batman who's been out of the game for 10, 20 years. He's been basically sulking in his house, watching things deteriorate. I believe the way it's taken form is that after Robin died, he basically blamed himself and put himself into self-exile, I guess the way it's the story that I've been reading. And something brings him out of it. This new girl, Carrie Kelly. I mean, that to me, The Dark Knight is one of my favorite comic books of all time. Just a lot of the whole story of it, him being old and coming back, kind of gives those little guys, a little bit of hope. But, basically the way he's dealing with the trauma that it's been driven him, he's older, he's angrier, he's just, and he's basically exiled himself from the world. He basically tricked the world thinking, he's this billionaire playboy guy and he's hanging out with Jim Gordon. Jim Gordon knows who he is and he's just drinking himself to death. And then he starts seeing, hey, you know what, maybe this city does need me again, and he puts on the cape, he puts on the cowl. The issues leading to that, there's a big thing, you build up to that happening, and when you see him, he's an older Batman, but he still can kick ass, and there's a couple different story arcs with that, involving Two-Face with the first part, second part with the Joker, and I guess you could say the third part is with Superman, and all three of those kind of they intertwine, but they tie in together, and it leads to a really, really good story. I mean, they made a couple ones after it, which was Dark Knight Strikes Back, which is awful, I do not recommend that. Dark Knight Returns 3 wasn't too bad, but this is probably the Mac Daddy. This is the granddaddy of all the graphic novels and my favorite comic book of all time.
Yeah, that one definitely falls under the list. That one pops up quite a bit on some of the top 10 lists. And I agree with you. It's one of those books that there are so many comic book fans I have heard from or talked to, or even people that have done interviews that said that was the one book that brought them back in. They grew up on comic books. They got older. They, you know, kind of left that behind. But then that one, they picked up that one because it were so many great rave reviews about it. I think it even won an award.
I believe it did. Yeah, I think you're right.
Trying to remember. I mean, it won like a major award for just writing, not so much the, you know, comic book, but it was actually a true literary award. But I think that's what brought people back in, because you're right. It's so gritty. You not only have the characters that they go back and see. Superman, for example, he's just become this whipped tool for the government now. I think you had a Green Arrow in there he had lost his arm or something like that.
Yeah, he lost his arm. I guess it was alluded to that somehow during a if I remember correctly, it was a mission with the Justice League, and it involved Superman. I guess Superman somehow lasered his arm off because his hand was on a bomb on a plane. And Oliver basically said, hey, get out of here. You know, I'm going to stop this. You know, I'm going to sacrifice myself. Just throw me off. And Superman just lasered his arm off to save him, but he lost an arm. I believe that's how it went. But it's been a while since I read it. But, yeah, that you had the Ollie Queen being the old Vietnam crazy veteran guy.
Yeah. Yeah. And then I think one of the things for me, the most striking about it was the artwork. It was
so good.
It was gritty, but gorgeous at the same time. It's kind of hard to describe. And definitely with Frank Miller, I mean, Miller definitely comes from that old school of the British kind of style. And you could definitely see that in there. Mm-hmm. So it was one of the better ones. And I still can't find the, trying to find it. I know it won some award here. And I'm just trying to do a quick search.
No, well, I did find something on that, which is kind of interesting. When it came out, the New York Times gave it a negative review. Can you believe that?
Wow.
Yeah.
Interesting. That's
one of the top 10 best English language graphic novels ever written by that. Actually, Time said that. So it's up there. It definitely influenced a lot of things. I think in part in good. And sometimes bad, because I think a lot of comics that came after it try to influence that darker, grittier style. And, you know, some characters are just, you know, they're built to be dark and gritty. But some other characters, when you do that style, it just doesn't work. So, like I said, good and then bad. So, and I think that year Watchmen came out the same type of year, if I believe so.
It was 86. Yeah, 86. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Watchmen came out, which honestly would be my number one. Not number one, but my first... My first one in here would be Watchmen.
Nice segue.
Yeah, it's again, and it kind of falls in the same style, in the same artwork as well. It's very, very gritty in that aspect. It was not pretty, so to speak, because of the world. The world itself is not pretty, and it does that same style. It's a alternate history. In the world, if nobody's ever watched any of the Watchmen movie, they do have a series coming out here shortly on HBO. So it's basically an alternative history that I think it was Nixon stayed in power. He didn't leave office, and it was just everything blew over from Watergate. And these superheroes were there, and it's very reminiscent of like the Justice Society and Justice League early on, that these people were there, and they weren't the perfect people when you actually get down into it, because you have so many different characters, and you have Owlman. God, I always mess up his name.
Ozymandias on the Ozymandias, yes.
Yeah. So you have a lot of the different characters. You have a Mr. Manhattan in there, and it's just very eclectic characters. You can see, and I do love the story, but you can definitely see where the Boys got their influence from. As much as I love the Boys, definitely a heavy influence on that. The alternate world and the grittiness of it, that, you know, all superheroes aren't the same. They're not all going to be, you know, your Boy Scouts.
Mm-hmm. They're all flawed. That's pretty much what they're saying. They're all very, very, very flawed. So, and that kind of like just, you know, threw it right in front of you. Like the opening with the comedian. I mean, just says it right away. I mean, where's this comic going? It just throws you right into that world, and you're like, wow, this, you know, like Dark Knight Returns, a social commentary with Nixon. I mean, it's just amazing. You know, the artwork, the story. I mean, just, you know, and the movie. I thought, you know, if you watch the unedited cut, there's actually a 3-hour cut out there somewhere. I think it's great. It adds to the movie, but the movie itself, I thought it was good. It did as good as you could for that adaptation.
Yes. Because you had that was Alan Moore, and then the artist was David Gibbons. And Gibbons, you know, you were talking about, you know, artwork, and he's got, you know, one of the British groups, you know, the artist that came over, and just the stuff that he did. I mean, he's well known. I mean, most people hear Alan Moore, but David actually was one of Alan Moore's, you know, biggest collaborators. So they did a lot together. Green Lantern. They even did like a lot of stuff overseas where some of the bad ones. It's just one of those ones. Gritty. It's something that just stands out, and you just want to keep reading on it.
Yeah, definitely one of the better ones out there. I mean, I think that year to have those two come out in the same exact year, that's just insane. And I think that year, a comic that I didn't put out is one of my top three was, I think Born Again came out that year.
Daredevil?
Daredevil, which is another great run. I mean, I didn't put it on my list, but I think that year, so just great. 86 was a great year, not only for my sports teams, but a great year for comics as well. So, yeah, definitely Watchmen is, I'll put that right neck and neck with The Dark Knight. I mean, it's right there. I mean, either or, you can't go wrong.
Yeah, and I mean, if you think about it, and you mentioned when you did say, you know, you were mentioning Born Again. That's another one of those ones that shows up quite a bit on those top tens.
Yeah.
So what do you have for your next one there?
I got one. It came out. This is actually one of the more recent ones. It came out in 2009 to 2010. And it's one of my favorite storylines. And it's Blackest Night. Probably one of the best Green Lantern stories I've ever read in my life, because they took a character by the name of the Black Hand, and if you ever know about who the Black Hand was, he's kind of a weak-ass character. Let's just be honest. He wasn't that great. The writing duties was taken over by, you know, my hero and Mike's hero, Geoff Johns. Geoff Johns, who's a great writer, by the way. So he took this simple, minute Black Hand character and made him to one of the most threatening characters in this crossover. And basically, if you don't know what Blackest Night is, it's a prelude. Pretty much, two Green Lanterns are sent out into the universe, and they're searching for the Black Central Power Battery. It's reportedly located at Sector 666. Go figure, huh? After touching down, they report the presence something has awoken. The two Lanterns are killed. Two monstrous hands emerge from below as the battery calls flesh. Basically, the rest of the story takes place in Gotham. Black Hand removes the skull of Bruce Wayne, who at this moment is presumed dead. I believe this is done after the Darkseid Wars, I believe, because it was presumed that he was killed by Darkseid. That's what I'm assuming.
Yeah, I think this was still that and the Battle for the Cowls, I think, was going on kind of around that time as well.
Yeah, so basically they think Batman is dead. So basically the Black Hand awakens these Black Power Rings. These Black Power Rings are awakening all the dead DC heroes across the universe. And basically, along with the Black Lanterns, a whole spectrum of other color lanterns come forward. Blue, orange, red, yellow. I mean, we've had yellow for a while, but blue, indigo, purple. It's just like all these things. A big war begins against these Black Lanterns. The Black Lanterns are basically the Anticipus of Death, led by Necron. So it's just, it goes from there. And let me put it this way. If you ever watched the movie Event Horizon, I think Event Horizon will be the closest thing you have to Blackest Night, but just think Green Lanterns, just think, you know, coming from the dead, just think Oa, and wrap the DC universe in that, and you really have a really good tight story. And I know it's not some people's favorite, but I love Blackest Night. Love, love, love. And I think it's definitely one, you know, if you're not a Green Lantern fan and you want to be introduced to Great Adventure, read this one. It's really good. It introduces the whole Lantern Corps. everything about the history. Just all the Lanterns are in. Hal, John, Kyle Reiner, even Guy. I mean, it's just, to me, it's a great story. And I'm a big Lantern fan. And this is one, hopefully, one day they'll adapt, hopefully, to an animated movie, I hope, which is probably more logical. But maybe cross our fingers, live action.
Yeah, I think it definitely could go that route for, you know, for comic book, I think, or not comic book, but for the cartoon on that. Because, yeah, just the depth of it, it's, I mean, you're talking 25 books, I think, total for Blackest Night. When it first rolled out, like if you take the prelude and then everything else, because it wasn't just Blackest Night, but yes, it also took place, right. I think, in Titans, I think was one of the books.
Titans was one of the last,
So, I mean, you're running everywhere. So, yeah, I think just like what they did for the Death of Superman on the DC animated series, they did two movies. I think that would probably be the best way to do Blackest Night, and I would love to see that, because that was one of those ones, again, I was out of the book world for a little bit, and I was already coming back in, but this one was one of those ones that kind of caught my attention pretty quick.
It's a good one. It's like I said, it's like Green Lantern stories are like kind of like a hit or miss. I mean, like this one, and I guess you have the Parallax story, which was kind of cool, but, you know, even that, you know, the beginning was good, but the ending was kind of lousy. And you got Kyle, he's had some good stories, but to me, this is the entire Lantern Corps. This is the entire DC universe right involved.
Yeah, it was everybody,
in this
yeah.
war. It's everybody, and that's one of my favorite things. It's almost like Infinite Crisis with when everybody's kind of teamed up. You have this one, and it's more newer. It's more fresher, and the approach was great too. And you got Geoff Johns in there, who's like Mr. Ultimate Writer, and I think he's writing for Titans, I believe, in the DC Network. You know, they had him as a movie producer, and that's not his role. His role is being a writer, and it shows. He shines in this.
Yeah,
and it's,
did, yeah.
It's so good that I think I might have to buy the omnibus of this again because I don't have it anymore.
Yeah, it's definitely one to check out. It's that one, guys. It is a big, long read. So just, you know, prepare yourself on
It's that. A while.
Yeah,
I mean, if we were talking about three comics to take with you before you die,
yeah,
you could literally just take this one.
All right. So for me, my second one is I'm going to my heart. Going to be talking about Superman. Actually, All-Star Superman. That came out, 2005? It started, it was a series that ran for a little bit, but they released it in as a graphic novel. And it's not too big, but it ran for about a year. So you're talking, you know, 12 issues total, but, you know, you can go out and find the graphic novel. Grant Morrison, I mean, do we have to say anything more after that? And then Frank Quitely, who did the art for it. But basically, it is the Superman that we all kind of, like, we all kind of takes us back to, like, the origin of Superman in a way of being, you know, this over-the-top god. Starts off with him saving a group of scientists that were close to trying to do some work by the sun. And they were sabotaged by Lex Luthor, who was basically trying to cause Superman to get an oversaturation of solar energy. And when they come to find out that what has happened to him, that he's powerful, we already knew that Superman was so powerful, but not as powerful as he became, like, where there was nothing he couldn't lift, and he could actually now see in his skin when the doctors are talking to him about it that, you know, your cells are firing like mini suns, and he said, you know, he can actually literally look into his cells and see everything that's going on, and it's his time now to basically die, because he's getting so oversaturated with sun that he has to make some hard decisions. At this point, this is still, as far as All-Star goes, he hasn't told Lois who he is yet. So he decides, you know, to take her up and take her out on a date as Superman. Takes her to, you know, the Fortress Solitude and presents to, you know, shows her what he is. She gets a little mad at him. You know, you're lying to me. You've been lying to me. But he, for her birthday, decides to give her a chemical, kind of a liquid form chemical that basically alters her DNA for 24 hours and lets her become him. Basically, she becomes Superwoman during that time. And there's adventures as it goes along. And again, when I say this is an old school style Superman, Lex isn't the businessman. He's the mad scientist, Lex, which to me, I love the businessman, but to go back every once in a while and visit the old mad scientist Lex is always kind of fun.
Yeah, it was fun. Yeah, I like the mad scientist Lex.
And
he's fun.
Yeah, well, yeah, and just the things he's doing. I think probably one of my favorite parts of this, I think it was like right in the middle of it, was Lex asks Clark Kent to come out and interview him. And of course, Clark's big, bulky, corn-fed, you know, Midwestern boy. So it's kind of hard to not know that he's Superman because just of the size that they draw him in. Of just like a monster of a man. But when he's in prison talking to Lex and interviewing him, the parasite is in there. And he's just dying to... I guess the parasite wants to get a hold of Lex Luthor for some reason. But then he sees Clark standing next to him and just sees the power. This ultra Superman now who's got more power than he ever has. And it just... The parasite just goes berserk and just starts tearing through this prison, trying to get Clark. But in the meantime, Clark's still trying to be Clark. And so Lex doesn't know who he is. And it's one of my favorite ones because it's just like this running around the prison trying to do this. He's tripping on things, causing fake earthquakes, you know, blowing at certain things to make people move or doors open. And it's just kind of fun to read that one. If you get a chance to watch it on the DC Universe, they have a movie out for that one. It's an abridged version of the comic book, but it gets the point across. And then
good movie, really good movie too.
And then the very end, you know, we find out that, you know, he's gotta go, but Lex Luthor has now turned his attention to finding a way of fixing him. So it's kind of a twist at the end that Luthor really finally sees the light that he's just here to help. You know, he's not this bad alien that's coming to take over the world. And it's, like I said, it's a good twist at the end, but definitely pick that up. It's got a hint of, did you ever read the DC Million?
Yes. Yes, I have. Yeah.
It definitely has a hint of that in it because at the end, Superman goes to the sun and basically takes himself into the sun and figures if he's going to explode and, you know, go into energy, let me go into the sun and release it. But when he gets to the sun, he kind of goes into like a comatose state and stays there. And that's very similar to the DC Million. In that run, it was where the Justice League from the past go to the future, million years in the future, and they see the return of Superman because he's been in the sun for so long, and it's.
Doesn't he become Superman Prime after that?
No, he doesn't. They don't do the Prime thing. The Prime thing is more. I think that falls more under the kind of the Golden Age.
I thought I read like a story that he went into this. He swallowed like many suns from different universes, and he became this like omni, like really powerful. And
no, this one he just goes into the Fortress of Solitude, which is in the sun. And so, like I said, they're very similar in nature when it comes to that. But if you get a chance, again, I'm a big Superman fan. This is actually my only Superman book on this list, by the way. It was a really tough one to choose. But this one really stood out as one of the better ones. I had, the Death of Superman was one for me because that's another one that got me back into comic books really big. But this one just stood out because of the different stories and the storyline. And it is Superman back in his underwear on the outside, which is kind of fun to see, to see that kind of style.
Yeah, that's always good to see the old school style, even when Batman does it as well. But I have read this comic and I got to agree with you. It's not a Superman fan, but I could see where they were going, and it's definitely that old school type of Dick Donner Superman. You know, like he's the good dude, and he's not here to destroy anybody. He's just a good guy. That's all he is. He cares. So and the ending with the twist with Luthor is really well done too. So I would highly recommend and back up Mike on this one of All-Star Superman as well. So I guess the third and last book that I got is a book that I've already mentioned, and we did it when we did our Vertigo. But it's still one of my favorites, and that's 100 Bullets by Brian Azzarello. I love this book. I think you can hear the podcast. I believe it's 32 or 30 that we talked about Vertigo. and I rave about this. So I'm not going to go into too much detail. You can just go back and listen to one of our older episodes. But I'll say the premise of the book is basically 100 bullets in a suitcase given to people throughout the world by this agent, Agent Graves. And basically the 100 bullets, and inside are some files and pictures of the people who have done you wrong in your life. So just picture that, you know, somebody who has really screwed up your life, made you miserable. Some guy hands you a briefcase with 100 untraceable bullets, a gun. He gives you all the files that you need. And plus, once you do the killing, you will be exonerated from any court, on any land, on any city, anywhere. You'll be exonerated from this murder. So it brings forth an interesting dilemma of would you do it, would you not do it. Like I said, I won't go into full detail. It involves this group called the Minutemen, who are 7 of the deadliest assassins in the world, who work for A.G. Graves. And they go up against a group called the Trust. The Trust is basically like these world conglomerate criminals who get together. They basically rule the world from behind the scenes. So basically, at the end of the day, it's the Minutemen versus this Trust. Like I said, here are previous episodes to get the download, but definitely still one of my favorite books of all time.
Of course it is.
Brian Azzarello's 100 Bullets. Definitely take that with you if you go on that aisle and read it over and over again. It's a great, great read. I'm shocked they haven't made it into anything yet, but I still love it. I still go back to it. I still have my copies here, and every now and then I'll just peer open through it, look at the stories, because it's not only just like the Minutemen versus the Trust. That's the backstory. That's the ultimate, you know, that's the end game right there. But just seeing, you know, being handed this briefcase, and what are you going to do? Do you want to kill this person? Would you do? I mean, you have everything there that you can get away with it. Should you do it or shouldn't you do it? It's just that, you know, that moral dilemma that I've always enjoyed in comics.
Yeah, I'll have to take your word on that one, because I honestly will have to say since our Vertigo one, I haven't gotten a chance to read it, but that is on my list of ones I want to definitely check out.
It's a great one. I mean, like I said, I swear by it back and forth, so I will never steer anyone wrong when it comes to comics. I mean, you know, once in a while, but this is one of the better ones, and that's 100 Bullets, and like I said, hear one of our previous episodes to check it out, because our Vertigo one, which we broke down some Vertigo comics, but this is definitely one of my faves.
I was looking it up here. Yeah, there was talk. They haven't gotten anything yet, but there was talks of doing a movie being produced by Tom Hardy, actually. But this is back, we're talking 4 years ago now, so haven't seen much since. It's, we went over to a New Line Cinema, so it's probably sitting in production hell right now.
Yeah. Who knows when that's going to be out?
Yeah,
because
they were talking here that they were saying it was part of the. This is how old the last talking of it being made into a movie was. They were in development of Justice League the film, Shazam, so that kind of gives you an idea of how far back that is.
Yeah, that's been a while. So, but that's one of my faves, 100 Bullets. What you got for our third and final one there, Mikey?
For that is actually I'm going back to DC. This one was a tough one. I debated that my runner up for this would have been something that I think the only reason I didn't do it is because we'd already talked about it a little bit, was the Vision book from Marvel, where Vision creates his own little world. But we'd already talked about that one. So for me was DC, The New Frontier.
Oh.
Nobody's ever heard this one. This is one that I, you know, when we were talking about the Dark Knight winning awards, this one's got the Eisner, Harvey, and Schuster award winning book, six issues, so it's not a very long run, and basically it is taking place during kind of in the 1945 to 1960, so it covers a good 15 years, basically post World War II, kind of has that Cold World sentiment to it. And it basically, it's showing the decline of the age of superheroes, that they've been there. So you had your Justice Society, I guess, would have been who it was there. And they're kind of not needed anymore. So these other superheroes that are sort of coming out, they're not sure what to do with themselves. But then something comes up, a new alien threat, you know, shows up, and it starts what we would consider, I guess, the Silver Age, or the new age. And so it includes everybody from DC. That's one reason why I kind of like this, is it kind of brings everybody together. Superman, Wonder Woman, Batman, obviously, you know, you're going to have your Silver Age, those three Silver Age ones. You see the introduction of Martian the Manhunter. You see how he gets there, what he does. Very cool. Like the reading it and watching that, this is another one of those that they turned into a movie. But watching him as he's learning about the world through television, and he's, you know, Martian can change. So he's watching TV and he's changing into these different characters, changing into Bugs Bunny, changing into, you know, Cagney, and just all these, he's going through these different changes as that, you know, learning what to do. You see the birth of Flash coming around. You also see, Green Lantern.
You see his birth.
And at one point we do meet Aquaman, because we're not sure who he is or what he's doing. And it's just a great overall story. It's very nostalgic, I guess, is one reason why I really like it. Because it is set in that time, that post-war, everything's great, everything's happy, but yet you have this style of these characters and how they're drawn, and I think it's great. This one was, I think, the art for, or not the art, but the artist for this. Actually, he was the writer and the artist, which is very odd to find. Was a Darwin Cook.
Really?
Yeah, you really usually it's one or the, you know, he does one thing and this, but you know, he's been around for a while. I've done a bunch of different books, you know, for everything from The Spirit to Catwoman, but then when you watch the actual movie, it's part of the Tim universe, but it doesn't have that style, which I thought was kind of cool.
The interaction with when Batman meets up with Martian Manhunter. Very classic.
Yeah, very classic.
I mean, it's very old school as during that era, but it's very Batman-esque. Like, he knows he's an alien. He's like, hey, man, you know, I know you know what I know, but you know what? I got fire. And he just says that and leaves. And I'm like, okay. You know, still has that feel. I mean, like I said, very old school, very nostalgic, but still has like that feel. Like, okay, they're still the characters that we know. They're still Flash. They're still Superman, but they're just in a different era.
Yeah, and that's all it is. And but you're seeing the G Golly kind of characters, and that's kind of, I guess, the two stories, the two I was choosing between Vision and this one, both had that like that post war feel to it. So it's kind of, again, it's one of those feel good ones. I do know there was a sequel, a very small one, Solo number 5, was a short story, was written from King Faraday, who was in there in Cuba. And then there was a, I think it was called Justice League New Frontier Special. It was released a few years after this one, because this came out 2005, I believe, was the date on this. Yeah, 2005 to 2006. Hmm. So, but like I said, it's just something fun. The artwork's nostalgic, the storylines, the characters' base, very nostalgic. So it's a good, fun read.
Yeah, it's definitely one of those. Like I said, I saw the animated movie. I didn't get a chance to read too much of the comic, but it's another one I have to put on my list. I definitely have to read it. And would I take it with me to this island? Not at the moment. I'll take my 3.
I will have to tell you, though, that's the one thing, because I reread this, when was it, about a month ago. And it's one of those ones, it just pulls you in. You just don't want to put it down. Because just how the style of the artwork is and just the story, it just sucks you right in. And it's fun to read.
Yeah, pretty much all these comics, any which or form that you choose to take them, you want to take one here, one there. I mean, maybe you have some recommendations you would like to recommend to us. I mean, these are just our picks. You probably have something that you've read that maybe you want to recommend, you put on the island that you want to read before you die. So, but definitely all 6 of these are real, really good finds. And go to your local comic book shops. Pick it up. I mean, if you got Comixology app, read it through there. But I would always recommend to get the physical copy. I'm always a fan of the physical copy, having it right in front of me. But if you want to get it on download in Comixology, go right ahead. As long as you're reading it, reading is fundamental.
Yes, it is. Yeah, and especially here, guys, locally here in Orlando area, Longwood specifically, check out Acme. I know they have these. I was there just yesterday. Some of the ones I was picking, and I kind of knew a couple that Kane was going to do. So they definitely have them in stock, and if they don't, just ask them. So yeah, definitely check them out and find some ones that you guys like. I mean, hopefully these will get you in. The ones I kind of picked, because they have multiple characters in it, and I think the same thing with you with Blackest Night. Those, when you find a character you might like in that book and go, wow, I really like what he's doing, or I like his take on this, you can go and find his book or her book out there and pick up their story and see what, you know, the history on them. So that's a lot of, a few of these are definitely good intros to just get into the world, period.
Yep, I would have to second that motion.
So that is all we have. I know this week, I'm going to throw a good shout out to our good buddies over at Acme again. This coming Friday, guys, it is Friday the 13th. So if anybody is in town and they want to have a little fun, pop into Acme on Friday. They are doing a photo shoot with Jason on Friday the 13th. So they're going to have a guy there,
nice.
full Jason garb. I thought that was kind of cool when I heard about it. And I know they're doing another Pop Funko convention here soon. So if you guys are any, you're curious, you know, check in with them on Facebook and see, and you know, definitely hop on there and check out anything, because they usually almost daily now. I think they've gotten to the point where they're doing videos of new stuff that have come in, and I haven't been in there in a month, man, and they changed so much up again. They're constantly changing the shelves around, so it's looking better and better every day.
Definitely, especially their indie comics are really good too now. Especially that one, I think that one of Josh's friends does, that he's does a cameo in it. I forgot the name of it.
Oh, White Widow. White Widow.
White Widow, yeah. So I haven't got my hands on it yet, but I'm thinking.
I almost picked it up yesterday, in fact.
Is it? It's still a little bit pricey. Sorry, Josh. But it's just, you know, I'm just saying for one issue. But it looks like a good read. I definitely have to start picking that one up and maybe do a review on it in a couple weeks. We'll see.
And also, guys, I don't know if anybody on, you know, listening, I'm not sure who's listening and who's on Facebook or vice versa, but if y'all guys are interested in Batman, again, we were talking about this in our 80 years of Batman issue, that, you know, there's going to be a whole bunch of stuff going on this year for Batman, but at the Hourglass Brewery, also in Longwood, they have an 80-year Batman art show. So if you guys get out there, I think they're running it to like mid-October, so at least through the month of September. I went out there this week. They've got some great artwork out there, and probably the coolest thing, which is something I posted on there, but it's, you got to see them. It's all the cowls for Batman. All of them. I mean, says, and even they have a Bane and Catwoman, I guess it would be, different masks for them as well. So, but just the different cowls are just amazing to look at, and a couple of belts.
Ooh, I'll have to stop by there.
Yep.
Especially at Hourglass, they have some nice thirsty brews over there.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And if anybody's a geek of any sort, you have to pop in there, because the walls and shelves are just cluttered with everything. They've got TIE fighters hanging and X-Wing fighters hanging up on the ceiling. I think probably one of the funniest things I saw when I was there was they've got a Superman, a black suit Superman, but they threw on a mustache on it, so... When I saw that, it's like, that, okay, I'll take that jab.
Okie dokie, very well done, Hourglass. Very well done, Jesus Lord.
So, but that is just kind of the books that we're looking at, or the books that we would suggest. And then, of course, you know, just some updates of things going on locally. If anybody's interested in, you know, getting word out with us, just let us know. Hit us up on Facebook. Hit us up on our heroesasylum.com page as well. I don't have any new reads, since we kind of basically did a read list already. I know I've got a couple of new ones I'm working on. So next week, hopefully, I'll have some picks. Did you have any?
Yeah, I have. I'm getting them ready for next week, because I figured this week was all about the three comics, you know, we do Before We Die.
Yeah.
And next week, I think the long box is going to have some, we're going to have some pretty good ones in the long box. A couple ones, one I just finished, one I'm almost finished, and one I have to finish. So, yeah, we're going to have some good stuff next week.
Very good, folks. So we will see you like we always will next week here at Heroes Asylum. And you guys know where to check us out. Like I said, heroesasylum.com. That's links and show information for us. And Kane, what do we have?
Well, you know, same old, same old. So we're always on Twitter, Heroes Asylum, The Heroes Asylum on Instagram. And, of course, Facebook, our page that we always are moderate. Always click and share and get to the asylum.
That's right. Get to the asylum, folks. See you next week.